Good morning. We are back, Bostopian News, with Evan George, to go through what was one of the more maddening, disgusting, inhumane thing that I've seen a Boston city councilor do in quite some time, and that being Ed Flynn's surprise trip to Israel. Especially when you consider that just around the same time, both the Cambridge City Council and the Somerville City Council managed to pass resolutions in support of a ceasefire. And instead, what we have here in Boston is a mayor who refuses to talk about it except when it mattered most, and she decided to state that Boston stands with Israel. Two different resolutions that have been kicked to committees, and we're going to briefly discuss what went down with all of that. And then finally, Ed Flynn's little journey on how to sell a genocide. And if you haven't already, I highly recommend you go back and listen to the episode I did titled That Time Is Not Now, and that documents a lot of the first impressions, first statements by a lot of Boston and Massachusetts politicians at the time, right after October 7th, and then the ethnic cleansing and genocide, which immediately followed in response. And even followed isn't that accurate because it was already occurring before October 7th. But just so I don't divulge into the entire history, again, go back and listen to that episode. I do talk a little bit about it, but we're going to begin here on October 18th, which was when the Boston City Council first took up two different resolutions, one proposed by Michael Flaherty, essentially saying, we stand with Israel, kill all the Palestinians, and Tanya Fernandez Anderson's resolution, also co-sponsored by Julie Mejia, essentially saying, we should have a ceasefire and we should be focused on getting humanitarian aid to Gaza. And what's fascinating about this day isn't necessarily the quick debate that they had on it. Both of these resolutions ended up getting kicked to committee by Gigi. That was kind of like her, you know, parliamentary procedure decision to move those to committees. I'm not even going to really comment or fixate on that. Instead, I really want to talk about the invocation that preceded the conversation. And I did an episode a few weeks ago about rituals and all like the, I find, bizarre and inappropriate rituals we continue. And the invocation is definitely at the top of that list. There is no reason why our politicians are joining in prayer to ask the gods or heavens for guidance. I just think it's inappropriate. I want you to read books, listen to some experts, and then vote on things. You can worship in the way of your choosing. Shouldn't really be on the public dime and in the public sphere. And I don't think I mentioned it when I first talked about it, but it is not separate from politics. And it is used deliberately, not just who the city councilors pick to give the invocation, but the messages that they give there are directly targeted towards the politicians and to the general public to get them to vote in a certain way. And nothing highlights this better than the invocation that preceded this conversation. And it was done by Rabbi Yitzhak Korf at, I believe, Aaron Murphy's selection. And I want you to listen to how it begins, and maybe I'll hop around a little bit because it is quite long. But my God, is it disgusting what this man says.
I was only going to say a prayer, but I was asked, I don't need to say who, to say a few words because I was in Israel on October 7th, Saturday. So I will, apolitically, I'm the chaplain for the city of Boston. I'm not taking a political stance whatsoever. I'll just share with you the feeling.
And let's actually just stop it right there. He states openly, well, I was going to just say a prayer, and then someone, and then he looks to his right. Don't make much of the coughing, because he coughs a couple times. He looks to his right at Aaron Murphy and Ed Flynn, and he says, and I was asked, not going to say by who, to talk about my experience because he was in Israel on October 7th. Basically admitting that, I know you're all about to debate on this resolution, and I was asked to share my thoughts and my experiences right before. So this is basically like an opening statement on the resolution, or this is just deliberately used to sway the elected officials or to the general public about what they're about to debate, which again is highly inappropriate to be given during what's supposed to be the invocation, which in and of itself you shouldn't be doing anyway. And then his statement, well, listen, I'm just the chaplain. Like, this is apolitical. I'm not taking a political stance. Listen to what this man says next. I'm going to jump forward a little bit.
All sympathize with any civilian, Palestinian, Israeli, anyone who's being injured. But this is Hamas is a government that was elected in Gaza. And they took over a territory that was populated by Israeli villages and Israeli citizens, a developed place where there were factories, where there were farms, where there were greenhouses. And within 2 years, there was a water shortage because the factories were turned into missile-making facilities. The water pipes were dug up to use for missiles. And Hamas was elected as the government to take over.
All right, he's going to return to that, and I will get back to it. But listen to how he began with, listen, like, you know, we all sympathize with any innocent life dying. And then he says, but Hamas is a government. They were elected. Now, anyone who knows about the topic, Hamas was elected, I think, in 2006. I think right now, the median age, and obviously these stats have wildly changed because of how many have been slaughtered, but like half were children, half were like weren't alive during that vote. Also, there's a reason that the Palestinian people in Gaza voted for Hamas, that this isn't in a vacuum, that this beautiful paradise that he was saying was originally Israeli territory was then converted, the bread factories into missile factories. When he's talking about like the water, I mean, Israel shut off the water to Gaza when they choose to. And so again, blaming the election, blaming the people who elected them, and then the government. That again, this is just, they voted for these evil people. Everything else was fine before that. He keeps going.
It could have been very different if the citizens of Palestine had not elected Hamas. Seeing the pictures on Sunday and Monday and Tuesday of bullet-ridden babies with their heads cut off.
Pausing it right there. No such photo exists. Gonna just cut to it. A few days before this Boston City Council meeting, where this rabbi is saying, oh, it could have been different if they didn't vote for those people. What, 18 years ago? CNN headline, October 12th. Israeli official says government cannot confirm babies were beheaded in Hamas attack. That what he is referencing is a lie. That was what Biden had to walk back. He's like, I've seen the photos. And immediately afterwards, they were like, he really hasn't seen the photos. And so, again, right now, we have the rabbi blaming the Palestinian people for voting for Hamas in like 18 years ago before this attack. And then we have him highlighting internet propaganda that doesn't exist. And he keeps going. And again, this is the invocation. This is the prayer. This isn't political. I'm going to jump forward just a little bit.
This is pure terrorism, barbarism. To support Hamas is unacceptable. If we get rid of Hamas, we can support the Palestinians who deserve a good life, who deserve to live in freedom and peace with their own state.
The Palestinians who deserve life. Scumbag.
We need to have the education to know what we're protesting and who we're protesting against. Adding insult to injury, our demonstrations around the world, not in sympathy with Palestinian civilians, but supporting what Hamas terrorists did and celebrating it. That's what's unacceptable.
And again, conflating the protests and saying that the people who are protesting
are celebrating the attack, that they don't care about the Palestinians, when, again, there is countless, countless, countless evidence that that is not happening, that there is no open evidence that these protests that are going on in Boston are calling and celebrating Hamas's attack, but conflating the two. And again, nothing but just a disgusting, rambling, propaganda political speech. But no, this was the invocation.
The next day, NBC Channel 10, titled, "Protesters calling for Israeli-Hamas ceasefire detained while trying to talk to lawmakers." Some of the protesters entered the John F. Kennedy Federal Building and said they were handcuffed trying to get into Senator Elizabeth Warren's office. The event was attended by many members of the Jewish organizations who called on their elected officials to facilitate a ceasefire. But that man wants to conflate it and say, no, 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 these people loved the attack. And maybe the Palestinians who deserve it will get to live. But that speech went basically unnoticed. Unnoticed by the press, uncommented, in what we'll call Boston politics. But then there was another event a few weeks later that made Boston Herald headlines. Titled, "Boston City Council is blindsided by presentation honoring pro-Palestinian student walkout by Gayla Cawley, December 8th. And now let's jump to that meeting. And it's very difficult to get numbers on how many Palestinians have been killed in this genocide up to this point. Now on like December 8th, there's a Reuters headline, more than 15,900 killed in Gaza since October 7th, and that publication is dated December 5th. Obviously, there are massive undercounts in the reporting because they're really just reporting the bodies they find. But very safe to say that from that October 18th meeting, they were probably up to maybe a few low thousands slotted in this cleansing. By December 8th, we now have well over in the tens of thousands. Maybe, again, over 10,000, maybe close to 20,000 at this point. It's difficult, again, to know the actual numbers because we've been, and by we, I mean the United States and Israel, have been killing journalists and any sort of technological, radio, internet communication to basically leave the world blind to what's happening. And now on December 8th, there is like a series of awards. This may have been one of the last meetings of like this session of City Council, because like there's quite a few that they go through of different presentations. And then Tanya Fernandez Anderson presents like a resolution that is praising these two students that organized a pro-Palestinian walkout at their high school from early December. And I wasn't originally, but I do just want to contrast these two students and how they talk about the conflict, how they use facts and not just internet propaganda, how they use statistics to talk about their message. And I just want you to keep in the back of your head what you heard from that rabbi earlier. And forgive me, this city council meeting was on December 6th. The news headline was December 8th. So December 6th, the Boston City Council meeting. Let's hear from these two students. And they are Aliyah Muhammad and Camila Blackman. And we're going to hear parts of Aliyah's speech first.
I stand here before you as Aliyah Muhammad, a senior at New Mission High School. Today, I would like to share with you a journey of activism, unity, and the power of students' voices. I undertook the initiative to organize and lead a walkout in solidarity with Palestine, this project which I fondly refer to as my one-day successful endeavor. It all began with the removal of the Palestinian flag at my school's Ufrenda. At first, I wanted to believe that this wasn't an act driven with malice, but rather a lack of understanding and ignorance, so I took it upon myself to educate my peers. I printed, distributed, and passed out information and quotes from powerful activists like Malcolm X. However, a disheartening moment arose when a Boston Public School faculty member questioned the legitimacy of non-Palestinian students advocating for Palestine. This fueled my determination to address this issue head on. I brought my concerns to our school's principal, only to be faced with dismissal and agreement with this faculty member I've previously mentioned.
And I'm going to pause it there. We're going to hear from the other student. But listen to how
cartoonishly evil. So far, all of the adults that we have heard, from the rabbi, from whoever took down the Palestinian flag, to the Boston Public School official that was saying, you know, this is inappropriate, these people aren't even Palestinian, why do they care that there's a genocide going on against them, to her then bringing this up to her principal, and her principal also dismissing her. Like, every single adult thus far is buffoonishly, cartoonishly evil. And she successfully leads a walkout. And I just want to play you part from the other student as well, just so you can really get both the intellectual and moral contrast between these two students and the rabbi that we heard previously.
New Mission High School, alongside my fellow classmate Aliyah Muhammad, coordinated and organized a peaceful school walkout to shed light on the struggles of people living under apartheid, and to voice my concern over the murdering of thousands of babies, mothers, and the eradication of generations of families. Today, I also acknowledge my privilege as I stand before you, alive, healthy, breathing, and in my community, free of war. However, the 2023 and 2024 academic school year for all children in Palestine has come to an end, alongside their futures and aspirations. As my school administrators asked students on the day of the walkout, "You're using your class time to talk about this problem?" Let me be clear. I'm using my class time to talk about this problem to address how Palestinian students' school time has been robbed of them. With no school left to go to and no students left to attend it, no resilient laughs of children left as more children die each day. The less their voices are heard and more cries of their mothers are bleeding through the streets. So let me be clear and let me be the one voice you do hear. As of yesterday, the UN reported an approximate number of Palestinian children murdered to be 7,112, and 4,885 women with over 43,000 injuries. This is not just an outset of the attack against Israel on October 7th, although I do condemn that in any killing of any group of people. In the last decade alone, there have been many attacks waged on Palestinian people, killing thousands and injuring over 150,000 people with little to no access to healthcare, clean water, food, electricity, and other humanitarian resources. And to put it into perspective, the current rate of daily killings of children in the last 60 days in Palestine would equate to all of the children in Boston Public Schools being dead by November 16th, 2024.
And I'll pause it there. But again, just the both moral and intellectual clarity that those two students exhibit, with Camila being the student who just spoke, giving like actual statistics, going a little bit into the history, talking about how there were killings and murders of Palestinians well before October 7th. Again, giving actual data from credible sources. And instead, from the rabbi, we heard a story that once there was an evil election and the people chose these evil forces who took down the bakeries and turned them into bomb factories. Again, while simultaneously Israel at that moment is bombing bread factories to cause an artificial famine, because that is the best way to commit a genocide, because famine kills children first. And we've seen that throughout the world, the use of famine as the best tool of genocide, because in some ways it's cleaner, it's harder to trace, it's not like a bullet or a bomb. And I wanted to begin, because essentially this episode is about Ed Flynn, and I'll talk about his comments. Actually, let's do that now. So during those two students speaking, Ed Flynn is on camera the entire time, and he really doesn't react. And the one part that I didn't play you was when Aliyah says at the end of her speech, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." And that is really like the crux of the Boston Globe article by Gayla, beginning with, "A number of Boston city councils described being blindsided by a controversial resolution put forward by one of their colleagues honoring two students for organizing a pro-Palestinian walkout at the high school last week." Skipping forward, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," Muhammad said, repeating a phrase that has been condemned by the Anti-Defamation League as anti-Semitic. And I'm sure people here know the history of the ADL and how it hides behind being a civil rights organization while simultaneously infiltrating left groups, whether they be black activist groups from the
1970s and 80s. They faced a massive lawsuit in the 90s, spying and infiltrating on students who were against apartheid. And for those people who might think, well, that's a little weird, it really isn't. Why do you think that an element, a pro-Israeli group, would be trying to target anti-apartheid activists in the 90s? And so, again, quintessentially, their role is to help launder both Zionism and the cleansing of the Palestinian people. And when she made those remarks, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," Ed Flynn really didn't react to it. Like, he's still kind of just standing there. He's on camera. But then later, when asked, and I'll just quote from the article, "City Council President Ed Flynn said that he never would have signed on the resolution as the body's leader or allowed the presentation had he known the context and details of both," adding that he strongly objected to and condemned a message that he found to be blatantly anti-Semitic. And what I think happened, and now we're going to talk about Ed Flynn and his role and kind of where he was throughout this entire timeline, is I think he got a phone call. And he got a phone call saying, "You got to condemn this." And he said, "Oh my God, you're absolutely right." Now, he didn't need to be sold on it because he is very much on board Israel, cleanse away. And to try to go through it, we're going to just look at his public statements being via Twitter throughout this exchange, throughout from his first statement on October 9th until when we get to really this big field trip that he went on, because it really doesn't make too much sense why Ed Flynn was chosen to go on that trip. Like, I mean, he has a very famous father, but Ed Flynn is really a nothing. And it's not like he has some strong voice in international affairs or, you know, really has the intellectual understanding of what is going on. And so why he took up this issue, I mean, I think it made him feel important. But let's go back through again his statements. So on October 9th, we have Ed Flynn posting out, "I strongly condemn the large-scale terrorist attack by Hamas against the people of Israel. This terrorism is horrific and unprecedented. Israel is our strongest ally, friend, and partner. Israel has the right to defend itself against these terrorist attacks." And then he tags at Boston JCRC, which is the Jewish Community Relations Council. He then follows the next day on the 10th. "Thank you, ADL New England, for bringing us together for this critical conference and discussion dedicated to combating anti-Semitism and hate in our communities." And then he makes like maybe one or two other statements. And on October 16th, when a Muslim child is brutally stabbed to death, he does release a statement, and he doesn't equivocate on it. It's probably one of his better things. It's just a few sentences, but it essentially says, well, it's brief. I'll just read it to you. "Over the weekend, a Muslim child was killed and his mother injured in Illinois in a senseless act of hatred. This horrific hate crime has no place in our country, and we strongly condemn any acts of hate towards anyone. It is critical that we, as a nation, come together and reject all forms of hate and bigotry, including Islamophobia. Racism, hate speech, and hate crimes have no place in our city and our country." So it's a little odd that he even commented on it, maybe because he just wanted to deflect from any attacks that he is just gleefully celebrating the genocide against the Palestinian people. So he wanted to, you know, communicate, well, no, I care about some Muslims too. But regardless, we really, again, up to this point, we're still in about early to mid-October, that we really haven't seen anything that overt from Ed Flynn. He did the routine statements in support of Israel that we've seen from basically every politician, Michelle Wu included. You know, a little retweet about an ADL event, but really nothing much. And then on October 18th, again, that same day that they were going to debate on the two resolutions that were put forward, there was another event that morning. This is covered by Jeremy Fox in The Globe, titled, "Display of 10,000 U.S. and Israeli flags in Park Plaza show solidarity amid war." And, you know, war is doing a lot at this stage. "The flags, 5,000 of the Stars and Stripes and another 5,000 of the white and blue flag of Israel, were posted one day earlier." So he wrote this the following day. So the one day earlier was that October 18th Boston City Council meeting. "In triangular Statler Park, across the street from the Park Plaza Hotel, at the behest of David Jacobs, publisher and editor of the weekly Boston Guardian newspaper, and a good friend of his who he would like to remain anonymous," Jacobs said. And guess who attended that little event? Ed Flynn. Now, he retweeted the story a few days after, again saying, Israel is our strongest ally, loyal friend, and partner in the Middle East. Israel has the right to defend itself against this barbaric, vicious, and unprecedented attack by Hamas. We will always stand against hate, violence, and brutality. We stand with Israel. And keep in mind, up to this point, it's been now a few weeks in the, you know, ratcheted up genocide campaign. But on that same day, October 18th, we have Ed Flynn at the event. And it doesn't really go into too much detail. Like, there is a one-minute video that Ed Flynn shares, and then he quote tweets, Israel in Boston, ADL New England, stand up to Jew hate, Boston JCRC. A few representatives, Jay Livingston, another representative. And really, my guess is that here is where he made connections to eventually go on the trip, that he showed himself as Boston City Councilor who is willing to continue to ride with Israel amidst their ethnic cleansing. And then, of course, we had the quick debate on October 18th. It gets punted to committee by Gigi Coletta. And then on December 8th, he puts out a full statement basically condemning the two students and Tanya Fernandez Anderson, who we heard previously. I'll just read for you bits and pieces. As City Council President, it is customary for me to sign every citation that City Councils provide to recognize individuals or groups. The resolution from Councilor Fernandez Anderson for the two students recognized them for their achievements in activism, organizing, leadership, and did not include any language relating to Israel-Palestinian conflict. I have always allowed colleagues to do presentations routinely at the beginning of City Council meetings as an opportunity to recognize people or groups from the community. These are never intended to be about controversial topics. But of course, you know, the rabbi who wants to talk about the deserving Palestinians and the rest can die in his eyes, you know, that's fine. That's not controversial. We can move past that one. He continues, if I had known the context and details of the resolution in the presentation, I would not have signed the resolution nor allowed the presentation to take place. So this is his apology letter. And you can ask yourself, who is he apologizing to? This also follows a protest that delayed the council meeting last week. And I didn't share with you, but also in the news, I think in later November, there was a people, activists spoke out at the Boston City Council for their refusal to condemn the genocide and to promote a ceasefire. I once again unequivocally denounce her actions in creating this situation at the council last week that allowed for those chants said from the council floor, as well as speeches and social media posts since the Hamas terrorist attacks on October 7th. And there, I think he's referring to the From the River to the Sea statement. And then he goes on to say, my family and I have been proud supporters of Israel, along with the Jewish community in Boston and across the world. Again, this is an apology letter. The Holocaust Memorial in Boston was built with the help of my father, Mayor Raymond L. Flynn. Years ago, I visited concentration camps in Poland and Germany, and it has had a lifelong impact on me. In recent years, as an elected official, I have always stood with our Jewish friends and neighbors. Like, again, he's pleading right now to someone as an apology. Like, please, no, like, here's all the things I've done, please. And then a few days later, he writes a letter to the Boston Human Rights Commission talking about, you know, the alarming rise of anti-Semitism in our city. And so he, at this point, really just seems to, like, take on this cause and champion it in a bizarrely personal way that we really was not seeing from him previously. Again, this is not somebody who makes international affairs the center work of his Boston City Council tenure as a politician. However, he does eventually connect it. And it's on December 21st when we have the vote about the $13 million in federal funds to address anti-terrorism. And then there is this connection that slowly starts to develop between this grant funding and the attack on October 7th. And this grant funding was rightfully rejected. There is absolutely no link to our increased security state and the public being safer. In fact, most of the evidence, if not all of the evidence, shows that the more we continue to fund not just our military and our police, but specifically our counterterrorism operations, the actual more at risk it puts us, not just from concepts like blowback, but the use and protection of informants? Do people really think that Boston was kept safe because the FBI had a relationship with the Sanaya brothers previous to the Boston Marathon bombing? Did that help keep us safe? No, and neither does a massive surveillance state. In fact, again, it is just the opposite. But regardless, and we see this later, Ed Flynn really trying to link these issues. And now let's just get to it. January 24th, again, he's angry that they rejected rightfully the federal funding. Michelle Wu, of course, in her rightward tilt, is now resubmitting it, and they're going to vote on it again soon. But somewhat randomly and unexpectedly, Ed Flynn, January 24th, posts, proud to join a delegation of leaders across U.S. on a trip to Israel to learn about the critical issues facing Israel since October 7th terrorist attack by Hamas. We must continue to denounce anti-Semitism and all forms of hate. And his announcement reads, Councilor Flynn attended the American Israel Education Foundation seminar in Tel Aviv from January 20th to the 25th, organized by the AIEF. The objectives of the seminar included educating visiting participants about the critical issues facing Israel in the wake of the October 7th massacre, the ongoing Israel-Hamas war, security threats confronting Israel on its northern border, we're going to get to that in a second, and the threat posed by a nuclear Iran. The delegation included leaders across the United States, from elected officials, labor and nonprofit leaders, educators, and leaders of the business and private sector. And now briefly, what is this organization, the American Israeli Education Foundation? Well, just quickly reading from a WBUR article by Simon Rios, January 25th, that kind of like discusses this event. The nonprofit, the American Israeli Education Foundation, often hosts politicians on trips to Israel. A draft itinerary of the trip listed war briefings, meetings with wounded soldiers, and a kibbutz visit. The trip cost $21,000, according to an ethics filing, and was sponsored by a nonprofit affiliated with the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, a pro-Israel lobbying group in Washington, D.C. And if you are listening to me, then you know who AIPAC is. Very quickly, this is from mid-December, Politico. AIPAC takes aim. A powerful pro-Israel group is positioning to try and take down squad members like Democratic Representative Ayanna Pressley in next year's elections over their condemnation of Israel's response to Hamas' October 7th attack and their repeated calls for a ceasefire, and expected to spend upwards of $100 million to try and knock out the incumbents. In 2022, AIPAC and an affiliated super PAC, United Democracy Project, spent more than $26 million helping pro-Israel candidates, many of whom won. And now let's learn about these little field trips that they go on. And this is from an Intercept article, June 20th, 2019, by Kayla Lacey and Ryan Grimm, titled An Invitation You Can't Refuse. And I'll just pop around. As she learned to navigate Washington during her first term, one of the more unexpected pressures she faced was about a foreign trip. It wasn't just any congressional sojourn, but rather a trip to Israel organized by the House Majority Leader Sina Horia, and sponsored by the nonprofit arm of the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC. And that nonprofit arm is that educational group. I would say that I was strongly encouraged to take the Sina Horia AIPAC trip. Everyone is expecting you to go. Oh, I'm sorry, everyone is going except you, recalled Kilroy, who resisted the pressure, telling AIPAC that she didn't want to go on a one-sided tour of the region. I told them that I would like to visit Israel sometime, but that I wanted a more objective view of the complex issues and more inclusive meetings with knowledgeable people in Israel and Palestine, not one just from the AIPAC point of view. Ultimately, she did take a congressional trip to Israel, but it was the first one organized by a rival pro-Israel group, J Street, which takes a more moderate approach. And this piece goes back like decades of them doing these trips. Quote, it was half Chamber of Commerce and half propaganda, said one senior Jewish Democrat in Congress who has gone on the trip. The chamber part, he said, consisted of ample free time for sightseeing, while the rest was propaganda. AIPAC trips typically include just one meeting with a Palestinian government official, the members said, and few of any with dissent Jewish voices inside Israel. And I'll read you one last piece from this article, just really hit it home. One former member who went on both trips said he assumed AIPAC knew that it would be counterproductive for the members of Congress to meet settlers, a conclusion he drew after meeting them on J Street's trip and being utterly appalled. He said he still remembers the settlers insisting that Palestinians do not, in fact, exist, and that whatever they are, it would be better for them as people to remain under the authority of Israel in a single state indefinitely. And I really want you to remember that last part, that Palestinians do not, in fact, exist, because Ed Flynn has said shockingly little about this little trip in terms of mentioning even the word Palestine or Palestinians. In fact, his entire op-ed that was published in the Herald on the 25th doesn't even mention the word. And instead, it is nothing but fear-mongering. The atrocities committed by terrorists in Israel can happen again anywhere, including Boston. Him then pitching about the counterterrorism, and of course, him highlighting rape and sexual violence. I'm going to just read you a part. The Hamas attack on civilians in Israel show us that we are all at risk. Much of the evidence that I have seen during my mission to Israel, which was sponsored by the American Israeli Education Foundation, will be used by investigators at the United Nations for its report on sexual violence in war. The female victims on October 7th were not only killed, many were raped, tortured, and dehumanized during the Hamas's assault. And of course, the picture that goes along with this piece is Ed Flynn at a picnic table with 8 IDF women, and then in the table behind him, in almost like a recreation of the same thing, there is another picnic table, which seemingly has somewhere between another 6 to 8 women talking to whoever that is. And then to the left, you see another woman walking by in an IDF uniform. And there are no men in uniform in the photo. It is just young women, with maybe way in the distance at like 50 yards, there's someone who looks a little heavyset talking to a truck. Can't see the person. Maybe that's a man. I don't know. Regardless, the image and the language is about invoking fear, specifically the fear of rape of white women. And there have been many articles about, not just about like the IDF's use of women, whether it's like viral TikTok, thirst traps, or others, but Israel's promotion and use of both their female soldiers and amplifying rape as a way of selling their genocide. This is, again, from The Intercept, December 24th, Judith Levine. There was no cover-up of Hamas's sexual violence on October 7th. The right manufactured it. The media and feminists bought it, and Israel is exploiting the outcry. And in that early December, we really saw a concerted effort to just focus on the rape of women that occurred or may have occurred on the October 7th attack. And again, we do not have a clear picture of what happened. It is well within the realm of possibility that there were rapes that occurred. Now, were those rapes ordered as part of the effort? Did some people in Gaza, once the barricades were bursted, run over? Did some troops go rogue? We have no idea. And we also know about the rapes of and sexual violence towards Palestinian women in their prisons, not just before October 7th, but afterwards. We have those public statements as well. But just reading you a little bit from this Intercept article, 2 things are not true: that the October 7th rapes and sexual mutilation were ignored or covered up by the United Nations Gender Equality Organization, UN Women, in a conspiracy of Western feminist Globin human rights organizations and youth progressives, or that behind this alleged rape denial lies anti-Semitism. Hashtag me too, except if you're a Jew. And remember, that is like what they tried to get trending in this early December, mid-December propaganda campaign, once the public tide definitely began sympathizing with the people who were having a genocide committed against them. And we saw headlines in like the New York Post, December 3rd, horrific news stories of Hamas attacks in Israel's surface, including rape of beautiful woman with the face of an angel who screamed to be killed. And this was highlighted by the Chapo guys. It is not normal to comment on the attractiveness of a rape victim, beautiful woman with face of an angel. Again, this is just massive hysteria. And Ed Flynn absolutely buys into it. And it's not just from that op-ed with the photo that they use. But Ed Flynn went on WBZ News Radio, the night side with Dan Ray, to talk about his trip. And I have never listened to this program before, but this interview was one of the most disgusting I have heard. And it is very clear that, again, Dan also fully promotes the genocide, all about it. But I want you to listen to see, you know, was there one talking point, or maybe actually a couple, that Ed Flynn learned at his genocide camp? Well, let's see if you can hear. I'm going to play you a quick little montage of this interview that he was on.
Including many women and elderly people and children, and the women were brutalized and raped.
A few minutes forward.
And we toured the area where Hamas entered, burned down houses, raped women, took hostages.
Another 30 seconds forward.
Coming into these neighborhoods in Israel, burning the homes, raping the women.
A little bit later.
Horrific violence and terrorism on October 7th, including the indiscriminate killing of seniors and children and raping of women. But
maybe it's just me, but it seems like they really wanted him to talk about that. That is where they want the focus. Because if you keep the focus on that, you can scare many, many white liberals into saying, do you know what? That is the worst thing I can imagine. We need to do whatever we can to keep them from doing this to our women, to our daughters. And if you want a great book on this topic, on using sexual panic to enforce slavery, to enforce an apartheid state, to get people to sign on to a genocide, it is called White Fright, The Sexual Panic at the Heart of America's Racist History, by Jane Daly. It came out a few years ago. And it talks about how using the fears of black men, brown men, colored men raping white women and focusing and fixating on that is the best propaganda tool that exists to help justify any levels of brutality, of apartheid, of genocide. And that is what I think Ed Flynn learned at his little genocide camp. And originally, I was going to play for you more of this interview because it really can't be stated. And again, going back to that like Intercept quote about like what they experienced and learned on that trip was that the Palestinians simply do not exist. Because throughout this entire interview, the word Palestine and Palestinian does not come up until about 20 minutes later, and it's a caller who does it. And I'm just going to play for you what happens. Because another thing, you know, like in earlier in the episode, juxtaposing the rabbi and the adults in the story as these like villains in terms of how they're discussing human life, and it's the children that have both just the moral and intellectual clarity. The callers on this program are the only ones who ask, like, justified questions. So, like, there's another element where it's very clear that Ed Flynn was told Israel is being invaded and we need to go to war with Hezbollah. Like, he talks about Hezbollah a lot and, of course, always linking it to Iran. I guess, you know, priming Ed Flynn to try to sell Boston on just this continuation of war and maybe even the United States jumping in. But here's what happens when a caller just tried to bring up Palestinians to Ed Flynn and to this reporter, Dan.
I don't know. I think it's a tough situation. I don't think you can identify an ideology based on, I mean, it's, you know, a few hundred people killed in Israel was absolutely terrible. But now we've got tens of thousands of those in Palestine that have been killed. And, you know,
remember this, Chris, if you could, and that is that no one in Palestine or in Gaza, it's really Gaza, it's not Palestine, but in Gaza would have been killed if that horrific terrorist raid had not taken the lives of 1,400 Israelis, men, women, children, for no reason at all on October 6th.
Hamas continues to, you know, say that October 7th will happen again and again and again. And they're not done. Hamas is going to continue to operate here and to invade Israel and to kill indiscriminately their citizens of Israel, whether they're in the army or not. Israel has to deal with Hamas. They have to deal with Hezbollah. That you can't allow them to continue to operate, because it's a terrorist organization. The Palestine Authority, kind of the civil authority, is more of a puppet government, I would say. Hamas is the powerful organization in that area. And we've seen what happened on October 7th. That's the power in that particular area, and they can't continue to operate anymore.
All right, I let that go a little bit just so you can kind of like get inside of Ed Flynn's like head. Because again, he doesn't know anything about these issues, and he's just regurgitating what he learned on this propaganda trip. But the moment that caller mentioned Palestine or Palestinians, instantly Dan interrupts him and says, no, like, we're not going to talk about the tens of thousands of civilians that are just not just being bombed, but having an artificial famine done to them. We're going to blame Hamas. And this all started on October 7th. If Hamas never attacked, you know, not a single Palestinian has ever died before October 7th. They lived in that peaceful dream world that the rabbi was talking about with the bakeries. And then the evil Hamas came and dug up the water. You know, it's not Israel shutting off the water. No. The cartoonish villains were the ones who ripped up the pipes. That's why there's no water. And then Dan says it's not Palestine, it's Gaza. And just keep in your head, again, from that intercept, that it's almost like it doesn't exist. And what does Ed Flynn do to jump in? He just further talks about how, well, listen, Hamas is going to keep attacking, so we have to wipe them out. And when he's saying them, he's not really talking about Hamas. He's talking about Palestinians. And he is going to use this little trip to try to sell us on this federal anti-terrorist funding. And he's going to use this little trip and the little tactics that he learned, the fixating on rape, to buy into white fright, to just really sell the people of Boston at whatever the Biden administration does next. And that is really what our Boston politicians are doing. I mean, we have Tanya, who's trying to get the resolution. Julie is a co-sponsor. But outside of that, it's going to just be let them do whatever they want, because these brown people do not matter, and most certainly do not matter to Ed Flynn. And I'm going to wrap it up with that. I really want to curse and yell, but it just infuriating in so, so many ways, and just so disgusting that these are our political leaders. But something that's not disgusting, and that is supporting independent political news media. And the best way to do that is, of course, patreon.com/bostopiannews. All of my content's there. All of my content is free. There are no paywalls yet. Just kidding. I probably will never end up doing it. Maybe just like something for fun as like a thank you to the Patreon members. But the educational content has been and will forever be free. And thank you to all my Patreon subscribers. Again, you are the reason that I do this research and record this. Otherwise, I might just blow it off and stay in bed and watch TikToks and play video games. And if you would like to add to that chorus, if you'd like to see more content from me, subscribe as little as a cup of coffee a month to both thank and support the work that I do. But again, times are tough. If you can't afford it, I fully understand. Like, retweet, share, spread the word around. And with that, take care, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.